Hi, this is ESPN's Dave Lamont, and you're listening to the Sports Objective Podcast, the unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
Welcome into the Sports Objective. Very special night as we do our opponent previews. And with us right now, ladies and gentlemen, all the way from China Grove, North Carolina, passed through this weekend. And that's Taylor Rosenbaum. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Dave. I hope you guys are. Tomorrow will be 1 month from kickoff. So 4.5 weeks away from Pirates taking on NC State.
Yeah, they wouldn't. I was trying to come visit Bubba Matt, and they wouldn't let me. They checked my passport. They wouldn't let me in the town. So for some reason, Matt Semenza, I don't know what I was like. I've never been to China Grove. I haven't done anything wrong there. But anyway, Matt Semenza, all the way from the great state of Connecticut. What's going on, dude?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Good to catch up with you again. It's been a busy couple weeks, so we haven't had a chance to connect. But, as I mentioned to Pete Medhurst before the show, always happy to have Pete on. But, Navy – has given us so many problems throughout the year. So I'm kind of looking forward to hearing what Navy has this year in terms of their personnel and just get a better feel for what to expect.
No doubt. Bubba Rosenbaum, very excited to have Pete on. As we thought, Pete, as you know, we had you on thinking that we're going to have a bowl, and then it didn't work out that like we had thought. And with Boston College back there, but glad to have you on and looking forward to a new season. We'll put that behind us. And I know Mike Houston is ready for that big game coming up September 3rd. We will kick off Labor Day weekend against NC State.
As I told you guys when Mike got the job, eventually he was going to get it done there. And you're seeing the fruits of that labor right now. And, look, sky's the limit for East Carolina coming into this season. There are expectations for East Carolina. When you look at the preseason poll, they're a lot higher right now than they normally are. So I guess that's the next challenge now. And when you have a mature signal caller, your leader back in that situation, I can understand why there's great excitement for the Pirates coming into this season. Great talent coming back. But again, they're a program now. And I think that's the greatest thing, the greatest compliment that you can pay what Mike has done there. They've once again become a program and a very formidable one. Let's face it. You talk about football games. That game in Annapolis last year was one of the best college football games of the entire season. And I don't expect anything less September 24th when we end up down there in Greenville.
And, Pete, it always seems like we were talking about in the green room right before the show started that especially we beat, now twice. But it's always in Annapolis. We've never beaten Navy in Greenville. Every time it's in Greenville, it's these big numbers, most except for, I guess, a lot 2 years ago when Mason Garcia started. It was a tight game. Most of the time, it's a blowout, 70 points, 50 some points, all that. So glad to hopefully we don't get blown out. It's a great game like it was this past season.
Well, you guys are a lot better now than when we were putting 76 and 66 on you guys down there in Greenville. That's the important thing. Navy's still going to show up and do the same thing. But the fact that you all, again, it's just a better program. It's a better roster. And it's a team that is much better prepared for what we do. And as you can tell, by that game a couple of years ago, 27-24 down in Greenville. And like I said last year, both teams had to make some big plays. Navy had a tremendous goal line stand to stop East Carolina on downs. Inside the 5-yard line, we had a huge kickoff return as well. We needed to do some big things in that game. And as we were talking in the green room, what a boot by Owen Daffer. Youngster on the road. And he just crushed it. That thing would have been good from 70. And you could almost see this for those of us that are obviously familiar with college football. You could almost see the entire exhale of Greenville, North Carolina made its way up, you know, the East Coast there as Daffer's kick was going through the uprights. And, you know, again, they earned the victory. And, you know, when you're not giving up 76 and 66 points, you give yourself a much better chance to win. And as I said, I just thought last year's game was one of the best college football games of the entire 2021 season.
Yeah, you know, and Pete, when you look back at that game, we were really able to establish the running game in the first half. You know, Keaton Mitchell had it going early in the game. There were some monster holes. And then Navy adjusted at halftime and really did a much better job on the running game. And Colton Ehlers was able to make some big throws, some really big throws, some accurate throws down the field. And you know, ultimately that put us in a position to win the game. But you're right. What a crazy game. You know, looking at Owen Daffer, I mean, that's the type of thing he can build on for the rest of his career too. So definitely an awesome game. And, you know, hopefully it's like that this year.
Any kicker, especially a young one, when you kick in your own stadium, that's one thing. But when you go on the road and just like, I mean, you go back and listen. And when I went back and listened to the highlights of that game, you know, you can tell how much that game meant to East Carolina, because on that fourth down play, that we stopped them inside the 5-yard line, the entire East Carolina bench got up and walked over to the sideline. I mean, the entire everybody that was dressed came over to that sideline to watch that fourth down play. And when we stopped them, you're thinking, okay, well, this is where East Carolina has been in the past. They get to this point, but you stop them and then they can't find that next, you know, response that they need. But this group was different. And I, as I've told you guys in the past, I totally put that on Holton Ehlers, man. You cannot take for granted the leadership of a guy that's been there before, that's played the amount of snaps that he's played in an East Carolina uniform. And you know how you know? Because he came back for another year with the opportunity that he has there. That program, and I don't want to say his legacy per se, that program and his teammates mean something to him. And it was his response and his leadership in the fourth quarter of that game that allowed them to come back and eventually get the ball last and kick the game-winning kick. And in college football now, especially with the ease of the transfer portal, if you're a team that has the same quarterback that you had the year before coming back for another season, hey, man, you've put a check mark next to that team. That's an intangible now when your quarterback returns from the year before. It would have been very easy for Holton to seek out other opportunities out there, but he chose to stay. That's going to make them a very formidable club with a chance to challenge in that upper crust, I think, this coming season.
Pete, you talk about the Pirates knowing what they have at quarterback. Navy returns its quarterback, and that's something over the last couple seasons that the Middies have really been trying to get that consistent quarterback play that they got from guys like Keenan Reynolds and Malcolm Perry.
Yeah, look, having Ty Levitai back again, and more importantly, this is the first since 2019, this is the first time we've had everything, a full offseason program, a full spring program. And in our offense, especially because of all the nuances in it, when you don't have that preparation time for a new quarterback like Ty was, you're missing out on a lot of tutelage that Ivan Jasper's been so good at in preparing every quarterback previous to that. They had the full offseason this year, and Coach Niumatalolo has talked about it glowingly, about the noticeable difference he's seen in Ty and his leadership now. You can see he has grabbed this team. This is his ball club now here in Annapolis. And I think that's going to make a tremendous difference in his confidence early in the season. And as Coach Niumatalolo talked about in that Army game, he took command for this team in that football game. And if you can do it on that stage, then you can do it on any other stage. And you could see that game was a noticeable difference in his evolution as the quarterback of this football team. And I do believe that, as I talked about the expectations for East Carolina this year, I believe there are greater expectations for more success on the Navy side this coming season as well, because they've had their full offseason program for the first time since they went 11-2 back in 2019.
When you take a look at this Navy offense, you know, you always you hear quarterback dive pitch, and then obviously that play action element over the top. And there's so many different ways that Coach Niumatalolo and his staff can scheme it up, and you know, in terms of blocking it up front. If you would just talk about the fullback position, because I know that's the position that's kind of up in the air.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think again we are loaded with sophomores. We've got sophomores and juniors that really are playing a lot of key positions for us. Looks like Anton Hall is going to have the first opportunity to secure that job heading into practice, which gets underway tomorrow. Team reported today. Full practice begins tomorrow for the very first time. And he's a little bit lighter guy, but he's a faster guy. So Navy trying to get more speed on the field, because in the American Athletic Conference, you have no choice now but to get more speed on the field, because this league has evolved into something extraordinary in terms of its talent level. So Hall, a little bit lighter guy, but a fast guy. So if he breaks that initial attack, he's got a chance to make big plays and take it the distance like we've had with a couple of other fullbacks. But again, look at the total snaps that he's played. That's a lot of inexperience at that position, but they have confidence in what he has shown in the offseason workouts and in spring football to lead the way at that spot. And, you know, I mean, we'll see. I mean, he's going to be challenged. There are a couple of other guys that are going to get an opportunity to challenge him, but Anton's going to have that first opportunity when practice gets underway tomorrow.
Pete, can you talk about, obviously, every program has had to deal with COVID, and maybe some programs have handled it better than others, but what about with the midshipmen? What about with Navy? Coach Ken, did he have a lot of difficult decisions like Mike had with some guys pretty much not going to get a lot of playing time like this year because of guys staying in scholarships? How did that all play out for Navy?
I mean, obviously at the Naval Academy, all of our kids are vaccinated. And, you know, I mean, that's, to me, that's, and even our superintendent talked about that at one of the, you know, spring sports banquets about, you know, that excuse. Now you're hopeful that you don't have to deal with it. You have to respect it, but you're hoping that we don't have to deal with it the way we have the past two seasons. So you're obviously, kids go through certain protocols. You know, you're constantly making sure that you're washing your hands, sanitizing. If you feel kind of ill, make sure you get checked out. If you're around somebody that might be ill, you want to make sure they get checked out. But really, I mean, you know, right now it's full speed ahead at Navy now in terms of preparation for the first time basically in 3 years. So that's the thing that you're hopeful will produce better results. And I think all of us, I mean, as I've said to anybody, you know, when Joe Miller and I talk on our podcast, It's College Football, you know, I don't really hold any team responsible for their results the last 2 years, because every team in some way was affected by COVID. You were missing top players at times, and there was nothing you could do about it. I mean, if a guy tests positive, he's not playing. We saw Coach Nick Saban go through that at Alabama. And, you know, everybody's, oh, is he going to test negative in time to coach in a game? But you can't predict, just like you can't predict when kids get the flu, have other illnesses, injuries, COVID. You can't predict when that's going to happen. That can come out of nowhere. And, you know, now it's just like one of those things you have to plan for in case a guy gets hurt during the course of the game. You got to have a backup plan. You know, if you lose that game, that guy on, say, a Thursday or even a Friday, you know, before a game. So that's I think, where not only Navy is, but I think a lot of people are now as it pertains to that. But you cross your fingers that, you know, everybody, you know, tries to do the right things and make sure they're available for every Saturday afternoon game.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Pete, just kind of going back to what Dave had mentioned, you know, a few moments ago, one of the situations we had here in Greenville was that, and really I think this was an NCAA issue, was that they gave everybody the free pass for the COVID year, right? But then they expected you to crunch the roster back down so quickly. And really, what I, in my opinion, and I'd like to get your thoughts on it, Pete, but I think what would have been a more reasonable way to go about it would be to say, hey, we're going to give you at least 3 years to get your roster down to a point that it, you know, that it reaches the 85 limit, because it really just put teams in such a bind where they had to essentially ask kids to essentially transfer to other schools. Did you all have issues with that?
No, because of the nature of the Naval Academy, the amount of kids that we carry, you know, our kids are out in 4 years, no matter what. You know, we weren't able to take advantage of guys having those extra years. I mean, it would have been great somewhere along the way. We've had a couple of guys that were hurt in a senior year, but that would have been great to have back in a following season. But at the Naval Academy, you know, it's 4 years and into the fleet, Marine Corps, you go. So that really hasn't been a problem for Coach Niumatalolo. So, you know, that's, again, part of the different fight that the service academies are fighting Division I football now. I mean, they keep trying to change the rules to, you know, it almost seems like they're unintentionally trying to leave the service academies behind, because there's just certain things we can't do. We can't go into the transfer portal and grab a guy, but our guys can go into the portal. But so, like, say we lose like an offensive lineman, we can't reach into the transfer portal and grab one out to replace him like everybody else can. So we know we're playing, you know, kind of with one hand tied behind our back now, but we're not going to make excuses about it. That's that Coach Niumatalolo is just going to get the guys ready to play football. The staff's going to get them ready to play. That's always been, you know, we've always known, you know, we're giving away, you know, speed, size, and a lot of different positions out there. But, you know, our coaches have always, you know, said no excuses, nobody cares, expect to win. And that's the way this team is always going to prepare week after week, certainly as long as Ken Niumatalolo is the football coach here.
Remember, coming up here in about 10 or 15 minutes, we'll chat with Chris Haymeyer, the voice of the Campbell Camels. Right now, let's shift back to the offensive side of the ball. And, you know, Pete, we've talked about quarterback. We've talked about the fullback. Tell us about those other skill positions in the slot backs and also the wideouts.
Yeah, I mean, we've got some good experience with Jaden Umbarger. You know, he's a local Maryland kid who's really given us some big plays, especially in the reverse game. He's been spectacular for the mids in that regard. So he's expected to be the starter, one of the wide receiver positions. But we play a lot of those guys. So just because you're the guy that runs out on the field for the first play at Navy doesn't necessarily mean you're playing every single play. He, Mark Walker, both very experienced guys within the offense. You're going to see Kamari Williams probably fight for some playing time this year. Croy Myers, Zach Kuhlman are probably going to be some guys you're going to see out there, because we'll play a lot of wide receivers just by the nature of the program. Really excited about what our kids can do at slot back. Vincent Terrell is a young man that's really, you know, bided his time here at the academy. Now a junior, looks like he's going to be a guy that's going to challenge for a lot of the spots there with Daniel Jones, another guy that's had some time for us, and Mikel Haywood, who you guys saw last year, just a sophomore now out of Wake Forest, North Carolina. That young man has very special ability. If he was 5'11", 6 foot, he's playing power five football. The fact is he's probably somewhere between 5'7" and 5'8". And that's probably why he ends up playing for the Naval Academy. But he can absolutely fly, as you all saw last year. Kai Plo Rojas, another young man that they tinkered with back in the spring. They moved him to quarterback to put him in that rotation behind Ty Levitai, just to have another body there. But he was a really good performer for us at slot back. So I think they're extremely happy with their depth at that position and the potential of that position. Again, both guys, not a lot of snaps in their career there. So the nuances, the blocking, all the other stuff like that, it's going to be an important factor for the mids coming into this season. But those are some of the guys that I would expect to at least get the first opportunities here in spring to secure a job. But the thing is, you got to go out and secure that job. Just because your name is number one on the depth chart on that whiteboard in that room, as I know where that whiteboard is and I've seen it, just because your name is there August 2nd, doesn't mean that you're going to be there September 3rd when you play there against Delaware. You got to go earn that opportunity right now over the next month in camp.
No doubt. Pete, how about the status of the O-line? How many starters are coming back? And what's your overall feeling about that group?
Yeah, it's a group that, you know, has seen – we've had guys that had got some experience, and that's the important thing. Guys like Jamie Romo, young man, it's really – I don't want to say he's come out of nowhere, but he's just incrementally worked his way up the depth chart. Another local kid out of Annapolis, and, you know, he has just worked his tail off. And he's earned the starting job in the latter part of last year. And he's continued on in the spring. And obviously, as we get ready for camp coming up tomorrow, you know, he's a senior now. And he's going to likely be the starter at one of the tackle positions. So, again, you're bringing back a guy that was getting valuable snaps, was involved in all these games here in the latter part of the season when things started to turn around for this club a little bit. We started to play a little bit better in that second half of the season. Josh Pena, another guy who's going to play right next to him on the left side, a guard, again, guy that's had snaps. So experience is critical. You know, Leon Mertesi, Kip Franklin, going to play on the right side. Those are guys that had snaps last year. So I like what we have left and right. Right now, you know, center, that job is, you know, going to be a good competition. A couple of sophomores that are challenging for that spot. Right now, and on any offensive line, you know how important the center is. He's in charge of a lot of stuff there, a lot of responsibility at that position. So how that spot works out is going to be critical for this offensive line. But I think because of the experience, and these guys were playing at the end of last year when this offense was starting to turn it around, I think that's what gives Navy a lot of excitement about what that group is able to do, coming into this season right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you just look at a team like Navy, obviously, you know, it starts up front. And the ability, in my opinion, what makes Navy so difficult is when you have a fullback who can, you know, pick up 3 or 4 yards on first down and then put you in a situation where you have second and seven, ultimately get you in third and short. So Navy tends to go as, you know, the O-line, the fullback and the quarterback go. So interesting to see how that's going to work out for you guys. How about the defense, Pete?
Well, I mean, look, I think, you know, we're blessed to have one of the best defensive coordinators in the country. And, you know, a guy that, as you mentioned, last year, Keith Mitchell's running the ball against us. East Carolina's run the ball very effectively. But Brian and his group were able to, you know, find a way to at least – curtail that run a little bit in the second half. He's very talented defensive coordinator. He's got very talented staff and got some experience up front with Busick, Berniard, and Cromwell. I really like our starters up on the defensive line. These young men have already played some very valuable football, and they're all three just juniors. So, you know, they're going to be a problem not only this year, but next year as well. And I think that's what's exciting about this defensive group is that defensive line. You know, Clay and Donald really split time at nose guard last year. But because they both played so well, coaching staff said, hey, we got to get both these guys on the field at the same time. So now you got Donald on the nose. You got Clay over at one of the defensive tackle positions. And it really, in my opinion, it's going to be a very dynamic group up front. You know, you knock on wood, pray they're going to stay healthy, stay motivated, do the things that have allowed them to be good players here over their first couple of years at the academy. They've played a ton of snaps. And if that threesome up there can get stalemates and make plays up front, it's going to make life a little bit easier. We've got some very talented players, I think, at linebacker. Obviously, we lose a pro in Diego Fago. He's doing some really good things in the Ravens camp right now. But we knew that. We knew Diego Fago was a pro, honored his commitment, played 4 years at the Naval Academy, just incredible young man. But you not only do you have to replace his playing ability, but you have to replace his leadership, his savvy. That guy played with an incredible motor. You were never going to outplay Diego Fago. You might block him. You might get him a couple times during the course of the game, but you weren't going to outwork that guy. And what we're hoping is, you know, guys like Will Harbor, who are playing, you know, those roles now, Colin Ramos in the middle. We're hoping that what Diego did rubs off on them. They understand how hard you have to compete at this level ironically, for as good as he was as a middle linebacker, he's probably going to be most famous in Navy lore for the accidental fake punt in the Army game, where he made an amazing catch of a snap that was coming at him 100 miles an hour that wasn't supposed to. Not only did he catch it, but he showed you his athletic ability running for a first down on that play. So that play didn't turn out to be a disaster for us. And it kind of put his career in perspective. That was kind of the exclamation point. But now the question is Ken Ramos, Ken Harbor, can those guys now, along with the others that are competing for spots with them, can they match that intensity and play with that same ability? Because he did so much for that defense and brought so much. Love our outside backers, you know, led by Nicholas Straw at our Raider spot, John Marshall at striker, two terrific football players. They're going to be in a midst of a lot of plays for us during the course of the year. And then in our secondary, again, by attrition, we had a lot of guys like Evan Gibbons, like Rayon Lane, who was just a freshman last year, Mabidi Williams, who's just a freshman last year. Those guys going on the field a lot more than they probably expected. They're back. They're likely going to be starters. Matt Peters, Elias Larry, really fighting it out over at the boundary corner spot. But that's what every coach talks about, though. They want to go into camp with competition, because you should have competition for spots if you've recruited the right people. You don't want to have, I got 22 starters and then I don't know what I got underneath of those 22. If you have competition for a lot of these positions, it's because your coaching staff has recruited the right people and you got guys that are hungry, that want to play. And in this case, you know, Navy's done that at a lot of positions. And, you know, again, you're hoping if they reach their potential and what they've showed you so far, this group has a chance, to get some things done on the defensive side. But as you all know, our league is amazingly tough. I mean, some of the best offenses that we've had in college football the last few years have been in our league. And it's hard, man. It's hard defensively for any team in our league to stop the variety of offenses. And think about it. Our league is as good as anybody right now in terms of returning quarterbacks. I mean, Mordecai at SMU, Clayton Toon, of course, for Houston, who's picked first in the league. You know, Holt Naylors, Ty Levitai, just to name a few. And, you know, it's hard to stop offenses in our league, as you all know. And, you know, all it takes sometimes is a couple of stops in a game, hold them to a field goal instead of a touchdown. That could be the difference between winning a game and losing a game with so many close games that we see in the American.
You know, Pete, kind of going back to the offensive side of the ball, because I know one of the rule changes this year, this is a quote from an article back in the spring. It says the NCAA Football Rules Committee moved to ban all below the waist blocking outside the tackle box. Furthermore, any player who is not a lineman or a stationary back inside the tackle box would be prohibited from throwing cut blocks. You know, we've seen that so many times on the perimeter where it looks like defensive backs are on skates as they attempt to avoid those cut blocks. So what, if anything, have you heard from Ken Niumatalolo and his staff regarding this?
Dude, 10 years ago, man, we'd have guys crab blocking guys 15 yards downfield and defensive backs were dying, man. They're like, get off me, get off me, get away from me. They're running from them and stuff like that. Look, we've seen a gradual change in these cut blocking rules over the last few years. This isn't the first time they've modified this rule. Every time it's happened, we've just adjusted, and that's what our coaches will continue to do, based on these rule changes. We understand, in a way, why it's happening. I don't necessarily think it's trying to eliminate the triple option, so to speak, but we're looking out for safety of players. And sometimes, look, let's face it, you know, and this happens in the pros too, offensive linemen who are good at cut blocking, who know what they're doing, do it in a way that doesn't necessarily put the defensive player in peril. It's guys that don't know what they're doing and chop guys from the side or from behind. And I think that's the biggest thing they're trying to alleviate from the game. And at the college level, the blocker is not as polished as they are on the professional level. And I think now they're just trying to get guys that, you know, you get a guy that's outside the tackle box, he's not expecting to get cut. And I think they're just trying to eliminate that unsuspecting player getting cut and potentially hyperextending a knee or hurting himself, hurting an ankle, something like that. So we understand why, from a safety standpoint, they're doing that. But our coaching staff, every time they've put a modification in on this, they have modified, you know, on our offensive side, what's necessary, you know, for us to continue doing what we're doing. And I don't expect anything less. Kenny never makes any excuses. They just figure out, here's the rule. This is what we have to change to abide by those rules.
And Pete, we talked obviously about the offensive side of the ball, the defensive side of the ball, but what about special teams? How are they looking? I mean, you've been talking, making a lot of great points, including about how tough this league, there's going to be a lot of nail biters. Bub always talks about the fourth quarter games. So they're going to be tight 50-50 games. It might come down to special teams or one play. How are you guys feeling about special teams this year?
Well, I think the league's top kicker could come down to your guy and our guy. I mean, Bijan Nichols, one of our senior captains who's made a lot of big kicks for us, he's back. Long snapper Ethan Wynn is back. And our punter Riley Reithman, who was really as a freshman last year, sees that job and really, I don't want to say he surprised a lot of people, but anytime you have a freshman step up, given the opportunity and they take, I mean, Riley was terrific as our punter last year. So I think from a specialist standpoint, I think we're going to be fine. In that regard, again, there's no substitute for experience, and all three of our guys have that coming back into this season. I mean, you got to remember, at the end of the year, we were playing with Reithman as a freshman punter and Ethan Wynn as a freshman long snapper. And, you know, again, as we talked about, and we all chuckle about it now, Ethan's snap to, you know, to Diego Fagoa, that fake punt that really wasn't supposed to be a fake punt. We all laugh about it now, but still, he did a tremendous job at a position we were struggling at early last season. And he solidified that spot. And again, with a guy like Bijan Nichols kicking for us, I think our coaching staff, supremely confident anywhere from 50 and in with Bijan being able to kick the football as he's one of our senior captains heading into the season.
No doubt about it, Pete. I tell you, it's going to be exciting. In fact, we'll have you on the week of the 24th as the midshipmen come to Greenville. And as I stated at the beginning of the interview, we've never beat Navy in Greenville. So hopefully it won't be 100 points, 70 points, all those nightmares that Matt was talking about at the beginning of their interview. You're always great to us, Pete. We appreciate you so much. Did you have a final thought?
Look, man, I love coming to Greenville. And not because we've won all the time. That's a great plus. But press box food in the American, it's 1 and 1A with Memphis and East Carolina. Now, hopefully, you know, we're getting closer away from the pandemic. We can have those kind of spreads again at those places, but it's unmatched. Memphis and East Carolina, runaway winners before the pandemic in terms of press box spread in the American. That was always the great thing about you know, coming down to Greenville. And the other thing, and I'll say this as well, you know, your fan base is, and baseball really showed this again this year, and it does every year. You know, the environment that your fan base creates in this league, it's one of the best places in the American, you know, certainly for any outdoor sport, but football and baseball especially. It's an amazing atmosphere. And that's a testament to your fans that have – look, let's face it. They've stuck through with this group through thick and thin. I mean, I've listened to a lot of those post-game shows through the years, and I've heard that passion when things were down with the program. But, you know, seeing this fan base rewarded, you know, last year for its loyalty. And like I said, I expect this to be a really good year again for the Pirates. You know, we got guys like Mitchell, got guys like Ehlers. But look, Ehlers is the important thing, man. You got a fifth-year, sixth-year, seventh-year guys in some places around the country. But when it's the quarterback that's willing to come back for another year at the same place, I mean, like I said, Holton could have gone anywhere else. He chose to stay there. I think it's going to be a special environment for you all. And I'm just glad to see your fans rewarded for all that loyalty that they showed in the tough times. And obviously, the athletic department hiring a great coach, and Mike was able to help pay that off for those fans last year.
No doubt about it. It's going to be great. Well, like I said, we'll have you back on the week of the 24th. Pete, how can people listen to your games? You know, I'm a nerd when it comes to radio broadcasting and play-by-play. I listen to a lot of my friends like yourself throughout the year. How can people listen to you?
Yeah, very easy on the weekends. You can find us at either WNAV.com or WBAL.com. Very easy to pick those games up on Saturdays. And, you know, for us, it gets underway. I mean, look, y'all got that big game in the first game. It's just us in Delaware, a little regional rivalry on Route 301 for us. Y'all got that big game with NC State staring everybody in the face. And, man, what a great game to open up the season. You know, against a great player like Devin Leary and NC State fully expects to compete at the top of the ACC. But, I mean, what a great football game. What a great environment that's going to be at the start of the season. And folks can follow me on Twitter at Pete Medhurst. And as you all know, I'm very easy to get along with. You got any questions about anything in the American, I'm more than willing to jump in and have conversations with folks online all the time.
Pete, thank you so much. I hope you have a great night and enjoy the rest of your summer. Looking forward to the football season.
Dave, Matt, Bubba, appreciate you guys as always. We'll talk to you in September.
Okay.
Thanks, Pete. Take care.
All right, bye-bye. Great to have Pete as always. In fact, now we have a guy that I believe, Bubba, this is the first time we've had Chris on, isn't it? If my memory serves me off, I believe it's the first time we've had Chris Haymeyer, the play-by-play voice of Campbell's from Campbell. Yep. How you doing, Chris? Welcome into the show.
Yes,
the hey, I'm first doing great. Yep, I'm doing great. But number one, guys, how am I supposed to follow up for Pete? He's the best, man. I forgot how good he is. It's been great listening to him for a long time. You're supposed to put me on first to warm him up for Pete, man. He killed it. So I hope everybody stays tuned for a while. I'll tell you about the Camels. But he's one of the best in the business, man, and one of the friendliest guys in the business too. So it was fun. It was fun getting to listen to him backstage.
No pressure. Actually, we believe in you, Chris, and we knew that you could hang with Pete. And so we love Pete, but we love your work, and obviously glad to have you on with a great program with the Camels. I know that I was thinking about this afternoon. I know you were coming on at work. I should have been focused on work, but don't tell my bosses that. But I was thinking about how the program with Campbell, you know, when growing up, I was thinking about baseball and basketball. But you guys have done a nice job with the football program and being FCS, and the program is really building. And with the way that college, not that I know anything, but the way college football with the landscape is going with realignment, you never know with the money at Campbell and facilities and that sort of thing. Next thing you know, who knows, you could be FBS one day. Not that I know anything again, but I like what you guys are doing in Bowie's Creek.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'm a little biased, as I say. I look at the world through orange-colored glasses a lot, but it has, not only in a football program that you all remember. 15 years ago, Campbell didn't have a football program, and 5 years ago, they were FCS non-scholarship, which that would take a whole nother show to explain, but you know, this is a Campbell football game that's so very new, the football team, and the rest of the university kind of ignited by football coming back here at Campbell. We had a athletic director that actually began his career early up at ECU, and Bob Roller. He came from Samford and he came to Campbell, and he said, you know, I'm going to build this place into something that's not only Division I in name only. Campbell had done some good things, but Division I since the late 70s, and he came in that season of 2011-12 and started really building block by block this Campbell athletic department. He started putting money into facilities. He started putting money into coaches and assistant coaches, into support staff. And he has built now a program that was an afterthought in the Atlantic Sun into one of the best in the Big South Conference. So it's been a lot of fun. I've been here for the entire ride, and we are still basking in the glow of last year after all the complications with COVID and everything. Campbell, as an athletic department, won 13 conference championships and 13 titles, and it was the most in the history, and really something that we're hoping to propel. One of the only missing pieces for that was a injury-plagued football team. So everything else going great in terms of wins and losses at Campbell, and sort of this decade of dominance. And now And now everybody's looking to the football team to make that next step, and they truly think they can this year.
Yeah, you know, Chris, I'll be honest. I was having a conversation with a friend of mine recently, and we were kind of looking through the schedule. And you know how you do it. You go through each game and you check it off as a win or a loss, right? And a lot of Pirate fans, you know, as we look through the schedule, we get to Campbell, and right away, you're kind of, I'll be honest, you're kind of thinking win, right? Just when you look at the history, the tradition and whatnot. But, you know, I caution people to really go into this game with the right mindset because, hey, number one, this is college football. Anything can happen on any given Saturday. We had a near loss, a terrible first half against Charleston Southern last year at home. So I always caution Pirate fans. I say, hey, if you know anything about college football, you have to be ready to play every single week. And, you know, Chris, I wanted to get your thoughts. I have to imagine that the players and coaching staff on Campbell are going to be sky high. They're going to be ready to go in Greenville on September 17th. So what are your thoughts on that?
Guys, when I was thinking about coming on with you, it started out as a joke, and then I started thinking about it. We throw around the definition of a trap game a lot. You know, you'll say after a big win, basketball, football, whatever, especially when you're playing a team from a lower division, that it's a trap game. Guys, this is the definition of a trap game. Think about how the season could go for the Pirates. Big win to start off the season against NC State on national TV. That next game, they'll be so locked in because they know that's the one that traditionally is where ECU lets down after the big win. They'll lose to a lesser opponent. So they'll come in, smash ODU. Here's a 2-0 Pirate team looking for, as Pete lied out to you, it's a Navy team with the offense that they run is never easy. And this is going to be a good Navy team. And there you have, sitting smack in the middle of that, 6 o'clock on ESPN Plus, a Campbell team that everybody is going to chalk up a win for. And when it comes to Campbell, I know it's going to be a team that's going to be a big underdog, but they have some experience in that COVID year. If you remember, in the strangest falls of all time in 2020, the Big South Conference did not play any conference football games. They were moving their conference schedule into the spring. Mike Mincher said he wanted to play. He wanted to go back. He wanted to play some FBS teams. He wanted to get some exposure for his team. And quite frankly, he wanted to earn some money for a new locker room. And he did that. It was a four-game season against four FBS teams. Campbell took Georgia Southern down to the wire. It was a two-point conversion that should have been, or Campbell would have won that game. They ended up losing a very close game. And then they hung in the first half at App, at Coastal Carolina, with the year that they had that year down in Myrtle Beach, and then again at Wake Forest. So this is a team that loves that underdog role, and they're not afraid, and it all starts with their quarterback, Haj Malik Williams, a guy that should be a group of five talent, was originally recruited heavily to go to Army coming out of high school. He ended up finding his way to Campbell. He was a freshman All-American back in the 2019 season. He played well against those FBS teams in 2020. And last year he was hurt. So he's fully healthy, and he is where it starts. As you guys know, when you're an underdog, if you have a really good quarterback, you got a chance. And I think that's what Campbell will think they will have a chance against an ECU team that quite frankly, if things go right for the Pirates the first couple weeks of the season, will really be overlooking the Campbell.
Well, that's how our program was built here, Chris. As you know, we were built on the being that underdog role. So, you know, from my perspective, we respect everyone. Always have to respect the dog. And I, you know, I expect to get Campbell's best shot that day. Dave, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No, I was going to say two things. One, Chris, the guy that's just talking to you was on a lot of wins in the 90s as linebacker for Coach Logan with Matt Semenza, so he knows about being a giant killer. We called Matt's teams back in the day giant killers because that's what they were. You know, I will tell you this, Chris. I know that with Coach Houston, he's not going to be overlooking Campbell, and I'll tell you why. 2017, his James Madison – team came in and whipped our butts. 2018, we should have never lost to North Carolina A&T. That's a whole nother show, they say. Then, as Matt said last year, you know, everybody was going the G-rated version of the first half of that game with Charleston Southern. What in the world? and so now there's no way where this program was a few years ago. Maybe if it was Matt's time that I would be very worried about a trap game. Not saying it can't happen. And Campbell, you know what? Campbell, even if we play our best, Campbell can come in and play even better than our best. You know, you never know with college football. But I don't think there's going to be a trap game. I could be wrong. But after what we've been through with that, hey, Matt, that Memphis game in 2017 that I love so much. In fact, I said I would have fired a Coach Mo, and he wouldn't have been able to ride back with the team. That's how mad I was that day.
Agreed.
Those guys gave up in the first quarter. No reason for him to be coached, but that's a whole nother show. But now with Coach Houston, there's a lot of fight back in the program. Chris, as you know, it's like with the football team was down. The only thing we had was baseball. Cliff Godwin's done a nice job, and hopefully we can get our basketball program maybe one day up to where. And in fact, I was going to mention to you the fact that, you know, when you think about Campbell, we have such a great rivalry in basketball and with baseball, with the Camels. And you would think that on a regular basis we could play Campbell, because I think it sells a lot of tickets for both fan bases with Campbell, the Campbell coming in with the Campbell fans coming in, and then with the Pirates. A lot of people may even have, you never know, it might be a divided house, right, Matt?
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. Hey, and, you know, I have to say, since you mentioned it, they're so impressed with the Campbell baseball team and what they were able to do this year. I mean, those guys could mash. I mean, every time I was checked, they were hitting home runs, and they made a very nice run there. So definitely props to the baseball team. I mean, that's a tremendous team, tremendous offensive team for sure. But Chris, you know, I wanted to ask you, so obviously we're just talking to Pete Medhurst, Navy, and Navy brings the option style attack. Can you talk to our fans a little bit about what to expect? I'll be perfectly honest, I'm not sure what type of scheme Campbell runs, but what are we looking at, you know, from our perspective defensively? What type of scheme do you run?
Well, yeah, fellas, we might have to get back on this podcast in 2 or 3 weeks or what have you, because this was practice one today, so I got to see a little bit of it, because Campbell, an entirely new offense, an entirely new defense, and on the offensive side of the ball, retooled and got rid of nearly everyone on the offensive side of the ball, staff wise, from coaching wise, after last season's 3-8 years, except the one that they kept was a wide receiver coach who is now the offensive coordinator. I do know it's going to be fast. Campbell brought in this past year the number one recruiting class in all of FCS. They have 11 3- and 4- star players on their roster. They've got a lot of talent. They have a speedy quarterback, as we talked about before. He's a guy that can run just as good as he throws, but he has pocket presence as well, not just one of those guys that kind of scrambles. They've got 5 of their top 6 running backs coming back. So they're going to try to utilize all of these tools. And I said, Chris, we're not going to tell you we're not going to show you the playbook yet. You're going to have to find out when everybody else does. When practice starts. I mean, hey, that's a new offensive coordinator for you, isn't it? It's like, I'm not going to tell anybody, guys, but that's okay. And so we got to see a little bit of it today, but it's going to be one of those offenses. You know, again, you talk about the underdog role and how you're going to beat some of these teams on your schedule. They're going to run tempo. And they really have the horses to do that. This is the most talented this roster has been, again, just in year 5 of scholarships. So they've done a fantastic job of recruiting, and that's what's so exciting. There are a lot of good things coming back as they return 8 offensive starters and 6 on the defensive side. But there are all of these talented freshmen that, again, are true 3-star guys and guys that kind of fell down to Campbell because of this backlog with the COVID years and a Campbell recruiting staff that went out there and really went after some guys that, quote unquote, nobody thought they could get.
Yeah, Chris, if you would, since you brought up those talented freshmen, you know, elaborate a little bit more on that, because as you said, you know, we've seen glimpses of what this program can be, but you know, you haven't seen it with consistency yet. It's not like you've, you know, stacked 10 win seasons or anything of that nature. So just, I know what publication, isn't there a publication out there where the Campbells are ranked second nationally in recruiting?
Yeah, definitely. They are first in a couple. They are definitely in the top five in all of them. And they're pretty much in the top two. And it's really a brilliant plan what they did. Coach Minner last year, before the year, and he was expecting a lot from this team last year. He didn't get it with injuries and a bunch of other things that happened. They went 3-8, but he went to his staff and challenged them. He literally came in during the first week of the season and told his recruiting guys and his coaching staff that he wanted to get the top recruiting class in all of FCS. I'm sure there were some heart murmurs in the room right there. Campbell hadn't been in the top 50 in the rankings of FCS, because again, this is a fledgling scholarship football program. He went in there and talked to his guys about it, and they had a great plan. They knew about the backlog that was currently happening. You talked a little bit about it with Pete, but with the fact that all these guys that were getting extra COVID years and taking these extra years, and thus that was limiting a lot of spots. Plus, they had noticed a trend that with this transfer portal, if you're a Power Five, if you're a Group of Five, and you have a few holes, are you going to take that four-star freshman and hope that he adjusts to the college games pretty quickly? Or are you going to take that guy that was all conference in the MAC and put him in and plug and play? So from the very beginning, they were on some four-star guys and some three-star guys that some Group of Fives and some Power Fives were on as well. When the transfer portal happened and these Power Fives and Group of Fives really got their guys and didn't pay attention to these freshmen recruit, who was there but a Campbell team and a Campbell coaching staff that had been there from the very beginning. It's a different athlete too. A lot of times now that these are guys that are used to the social media attention, that they're used to getting attention and praise. And there was a Campbell team that had been with them and had been truthful with them and had been true and had been there with the scholarship in their hand from the very beginning. And these guys, some of them didn't have anywhere else to go, but a lot of them chose Campbell over some Group of Five. So they have guys like Miles Rouser, who is a safety that they say is going to be unbelievable. Edric Weldon, who is a linebacker. I mean these guys that were true 3-4-star guys that are playing at Campbell. I mean, 11 of them, which is really unheard of for a team that maybe got a 3-star on a transfer over the past couple of years. So that's what everybody here around Buies Creek and Campbell fans are really, really excited to see. This is by far not only one of the most talented teams that Campbell has had, the most talented team that Campbell has had, but the number one recruiting class in all of FCS. So high expectations, and these guys are going to play too, which is going to be really exciting.
Yeah, Chris, and I think you bring up a really interesting point, not to veer off topic, but when you look at what the transfer portal has done to college football in particular, it really does in many ways afford an opportunity for a school like Campbell, because what you're seeing now are less and less high school recruits, okay? Because like you mentioned, are you going to recruit a senior from high school or potentially a sophomore from Oklahoma who has game experience and is 21 years old? So that's a really interesting point, and I can definitely see how Campbell – has been able to capitalize. And I think they're very, you know, very smart for taking advantage of that. You have to look for every avenue you can.
No doubt. And also too, you know, it starts at the top. Mike Minner, of course, if you're a Carolina Panthers fan here over the last couple of decades, he was the guy in the defense, was a starter for 10 years, but won an NFC championship with them as well. But it was, you know, he is a guy that had a vision for this program and for this team. And now in his 10th year, you know, it takes a lot of stones to go in and challenge your coaches to get that and truly believe it. And he is great too, because, you know, once you get in the living room with Coach Mike Minner, you're going to believe in him and you're going to believe in Campbell. And one of the things too, that he was selling these high school recruits is, as you said, you know, Campbell does not have the winning football tradition because they've only been around and only been scholarship for 5 years, only been around in the modern era for 15 years. They have had three winning seasons before the COVID year, but he says, hey, this is a chance to make your mark. You could be the first team that gets 7 wins. You could be the first team that wins a conference championship, the first team in the FCS playoffs. And that's something that also is very important to this new generation of student athlete that's coming up. Hey, they want to be a first. They want to make their mark. They want to make their own way. And he got a lot of very, very talented high school players to make their way to Buies Creek.
You know, Chris, you were talking about football, obviously. But if you want to take a page out of Justin Harris' playbook, he built the program, Matt. You know, you were talking about Campbell baseball, but the transfer portal has been very kind to Coach Hare, and he's been great to us since 2019. He's been coming on every single year with us, and I remember him talking. I believe it was the first visit he came on with us, talking about that very thing. You know, building the program, going out and getting those guys that really fit his program. And he built it, and he's done an excellent job. Just ask Tennessee. Unbelievable. We were pulling hard for you guys there. I know with that was a regional and super regional in Knoxville, I should say. But what a great, great thing there. But anyway, you're talking about football, but baseball could be a great example of that as well.
I tell you what, and Coach Hare, you know, he has done something that the other coaches are pattering or are trying to do and pattering up themselves or because he built it from nothing. And, you know, I'm sure he told you the story when he was here, you know, when Campbell went from the Atlantic Sun to the Big South, they had won 3 conference games the year before. They played at a baseball stadium that was a glorified high school field. And it's amazing that he has built that place brick by brick. And it starts with the facilities. Again, we told you about the athletic director that came in and really pumped money into there, but then unbelievable recruiting, you know, because he would convince some transfers of some JUCO guys to come, but then a lot of homegrown guys as well. He had 2 guys go in the first 50 picks of the MLB draft, including Zach Neto, who was in the top 15 this year, first round draft pick to the Angels, and Thomas Harrington, who's from right down the road in Sanford. These 2 guys were homegrown guys. So that's the next level of his program and Coach Hare being able to build it up is the fact that, like, yes, he's still getting those transfers and those JUCO guys that feel a little bit undervalued and he gets the most out of them, but he's getting homegrown guys as well. 4 straight regionals. 2 of the last 4 years, he's been in the regional finals. They were really a couple of good hits away a couple years ago from making the regional final, as you know, there with ECU and some of those battles. So it's amazing what he has built, and he has shown everybody that, hey, you know, it doesn't matter if you're from Buies Creek, North Carolina, and you're Campbell University, you can build yourself not only into a winner, but a player on a national level. And their goal now at Campbell is not only getting to the NCAA tournament, it's getting to a super regional, and it's something that he's been very close to.
And Chris, shifting back to football, before we talk about some more of the personnel on the field, just talk about the coaching staff that Coach Manners assembled, but he did have a defection here recently as former West Virginia coach and quarterbacks coach Pat White moved on to the NFL with the LA Chargers.
Yeah, it's a very unique coaching staff when you can lose a guy like Pat White, you know, one of the best college quarterbacks ever to play, and then you say, well, yeah, we still have 3 guys that have played in the professional ranks on the coaching staff. You know, it's Coach Mike Minner, but his teammate for that NFC championship winning team, Reggie Howard, he is the co-defensive coordinator, and D Brown joined the coaching staff as well. I know him as a Kansas City Chiefs fan when he played for the Chiefs, but he's coaching the running backs now. So that has been another really, really great thing to see. It starts at the top with Coach Minner, and look, he's a guy that can really promise you that that he can set things in place and show you the path to the NFL, because he's been at the NFL and at the highest level, and he was a starter for over 10 years. But he knows the value of getting other guys that have either been great in college or have had some time in the NFL, and he's really built his staff around that. You know, he here in year 10 has not only moved a program from FCS Knowledge Scholarship to FCS Scholarship, he's gotten the recruiting, but he's also got the coaching as well, and he thinks he also has the coaching staff to get this Campbell team to the next level.
Let's shift over and take a look at the defensive side of the ball. Earlier you were talking about, you know, the experience that returns at the quarterback position, but what do the Campbells look like defensively?
We call him the Beast, Brevin Allen. He's 6'4", he's 285, he's from Greensboro. He's the Big South Conference preseason defensive player of the year. He was a guy that had 18 tackles for losses. He had nearly 9 sacks last year, and he's just one of those guys that's so disruptive in the defensive line. They're retooling their entire defense as well. They're gonna make it a hybrid that's gonna be very, very hard to read. Again, I've been sworn to secrecy before our home opener on Thursday, September 1st versus the Citadel. But it's gonna be a very different look, and he's gonna really capitalize on that athleticism. We have a lot of really good linebackers that's coming back. Some guys that have been here in the program for a while. Keyshawn Thompson, the leading tackler, is coming back. CJ Tillman is a young guy that really came on last year. Justice Galloway Velasquez is another one of the local products. This coaching staff has done great of gathering talent from around here as well as all over the Southeast in the United States. But he's a guy from Fayetteville. That was a former Big South Conference all first teamer. He's been hurt for the last couple of years, but they're hoping if they can get him back and get him healthy, that they're going to have the guys up front. Defensive line, linebackers are going to be good. They lost a lot of really, really good players in the secondary. But again, they've kind of replaced that with a lot of defensive talent. So again, that's why it's going to be like Christmas Day, that first scrimmage that they have here at Campbell. A week from this Thursday, because we're going to see a whole lot of new and a whole lot of talent, but also the schemes and the new offensive coordinator and the new co-defensive coordinators. There's just so much to look forward to down here in the next couple of weeks.
Well, Chris, I didn't want to get you in trouble with the new coaching staff. You know, I know you need to. I might have somebody scouting the scrimmage, though. I'm going to have somebody way up, maybe with a pair of binoculars. You know, are we running a 3-4 defense, a 4-3? What do we have? So, we'll try to see what we can do.
Definitely. I mean,
you're a smart man, Chris. You're a smart man.
I know. I know they're listening. They're always listening. They'll have a guy on the other side with binoculars too. So tell your guy to be careful.
Now, Chris, I don't think you've referenced this yet, but you know, obviously it's a new season. But a year ago, how were the Camels defensively in terms of allowing explosion plays or not allowing explosion plays, I should say? Because obviously, with East Carolina, you have a guy like Keaton Mitchell who had, I guess, what, at least probably 5 or 6 touchdowns, maybe more, in excess of 60 yards.
No doubt. You know, big plays had been a problem in the past. And like I say, that's the one thing that you, when you start to think about this team, you're excited about the youth, and you're excited about up front and the players, but the secondary having to replace some key parts. Darian Slade was a guy that was on a lot of NFL team's radar for a while during his collegiate career. He was kind of the quarterback of the defense back there. That's overused a lot, but he was a guy as a safety in his head coach's Mike Minner's footsteps that really did a lot to clean up things from the back. So that's going to be a big thing, the explosive plays. And the one good thing, bad thing, there's going to be some kinks to work out on both sides of the ball, especially defensively. Campbell has a pretty good schedule leading up to ECU. Obviously, no one even close to what ECU is going to put out there on both sides of the ball. But they'll start off against the Citadel. That is always tough. And it's going to be a Citadel team that's going to come back. And that's going to be a pretty good matchup to start. And then they'll have to go to at William and Mary. a team that's going to be pretty good too. So I like how the schedule lays out that there's going to be a couple of ladders, a couple of games that are going to be either 50-50 or they'll won't be favored in, to kind of work out some of those kinks and get things ready. Because again, as you guys know, with what ECU has with their experience, and as you mentioned, the explosiveness, it's going to have to be a defense, a new defense, and some new guys that are going to have to work the kinks out and get their stuff together, or it's going to be a game that's going to be a little messy.
Chris, I want to ask a question off the field. You were talking about just a little bit ago about the excitement, having the number one recruiting class, which is amazing. Guys, I don't even know, has East Carolina ever had we've never had in modern era, I know, the number one recruiting class. So very impressive there with football. But what about season tickets? Is that something you guys stressed there with Campbell?
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's a really great atmosphere for football. Barker Lane Stadium seats 5,500. And before the COVID years, this was a stadium that averaged a sellout. Three straight years averaging over 5,500 a game, and it's just perfect. It's intimate. You can park right across the street. You can park right across the street for free. If you pay a little bit more, you can literally be right across from the stadium. It's a great small football atmosphere that really gets rocking, and season tickets have been big and have been on everybody's mind, because this will be one of the first years too, as very strict with COVID protocols around here for a lot of different reasons, mainly because Buies Creek being such a small community and wanting to protect a small undergraduate population here. So everyone's chomping at the bit, not only to get to see this team, but to be back in the stadium without the restrictions, you know, that have really taken the fun out of things, quite frankly, over the last couple of years. Only five home games this year as well. So season tickets, if you want, like we say, the good seats with the seat backs, and you know that you have one every single game, season tickets is what you need. Thank you for the plug. GoCamels.com on sale now. Single game tickets just went on sale this Monday. I appreciate that. Thank you for teeing that up for me.
No doubt about it. But you said that Matt could drive his truck down and he can park across the street with the binoculars and he won't have to pay for season tickets, right? He can just wait.
You don't have to do that, but that's no fun. But come on, you know my number. I'll get you the media parking pass. We'll put you right back up. You'll be able to walk right up to the Carly C's IGA press tower as well, man. We'll have a seat for you in there. You don't have to worry about sneaking around with the binoculars.
Beautiful. We appreciate that, Chris.
No doubt. I would love to see that. I'm like Matt and Bubba when it comes to – it's fun to see the different – we'll have to take you up on that sometime to come down to Buies Creek, especially with, like, the fan base. And I know there's a lot of proud alums. And one of the things I remember about Campbell very well is the – can you talk about – maybe you were talking about facilities earlier, but there's a lot of money at Campbell. Maybe I know that with COVID hit a lot of the universities hard, but I remember there's a lot of folks that are good, big donors. And is there more things you guys want as far as athletic facilities are concerned?
Well, that's what the very, very good thing was. And again, we've had some very generous donors, and it's such a tight knit place. If you have gone to Campbell, you know. And so you're automatically in the family, and our alums, not only from the athletic and student athlete side, but our alums over the 100 plus years that Campbell has been, you know, a junior college and then a college and then now a university that really has programs that draws from all over the United States and the world. It's been very, very good to see those donors really step up for this era that has been, hey, you know, we've been Division I for a while, but now we're going to be Division I and win. And the great thing is, with you can kind of see on the horizon, we all don't want to admit this, but the economy is going to go one way or another. And right now it looks like it's going to go that other way. Well, one of the very good things about Campbell is with this building boom, we're in really, really good shape when it comes to facilities. Like Mike Minner, do coaches like Justin Hare, want more for their student athletes, want more for recruiting, want more to increase the wins, definitely. But the great thing is with this building boom that Campbell has had, everything is new. Everything is within 15 years old of being built, and really in the past couple of years has been remodeled in some way. So very generous donors that continue to do a lot to make Campbell a winner. But the good thing is Campbell is in really, really good shape if things around the country, you know, cause for universities and athletic department to pull back a little bit.
Yeah, I remember going to basketball camp. That's a funny story, but when Billy Lee was the coach.
Yeah.
And Matt, they used to, and back in the 80s, they called it the Billy Barn. And I know you, what's the name of the new facility? I know you'll have a new gym there.
Yeah, definitely. It's Gore Arena. And you want to talk about moving on up to the penthouse. As you talked about, Carter Gym was, and this is a place where they played UCF in the Atlantic Sun 16 years ago. It was the smallest gym in all of Division I basketball. And if you've seen the movie Hoosiers, it was if they played at one of those gyms that wasn't so great in Indiana. That is truly what it is now. It's fun to look at from a distance, and they're talking about playing some throwback games in there. The Pope Convocation Center Gore Arena seats 3,300, which is just about perfect. If it's half full, it feels very, very good and very loud, and they'll pack the place out as well throughout the year. You mentioned the basketball school, and one of the many great and unique things about Campbell, it was the first basketball camp in the entire country. Basketball camps weren't a thing back in the 50s and 60s. They started what they called the Campbell Basketball School, and it became in the 70s and 80s the place where the best ACC players and the ACC coaches would come through for a month. Back then, where, you know, you could pay a guy to come down and camp. I mean, there are legendary pictures with, you know, Michael Jordan down there. Vinny Del Negro, the who's who of ACC in the 70s and 80s ran through Buies Creek each and every year. And I tell you, I can get you the documentation for it. I'm not just making up a story for you. So that basketball school that a lot of locals went to around here, really one of the oldest and more famous in basketball camp history.
As a matter of fact, one of the great speakers, Matt and Bubba, they had legendary coach from Wake Forest, Bones McKinney.
Yep. He was one of the creators of it.
And he was unbelievable. Not only I enjoyed that time down there, and a lot of great competition, a lot of great basketball players. I was lucky just to be in the gym because there were a lot of great players there, but certainly a lot of fun back in, believe it or not, 1987. I don't even know if Bubba remembers 1987, but I think he was in first grade then. But anyway, it was a great, great time. And the university with the growth, I'll tell you another great thing that we need at East Carolina that we don't have that you guys have in Raleigh is a law school. And your law school at one time, I know, Matt, they had 100% passage of the bar. I don't know if that's still the case, but that was incredible. But certainly in the great city of Raleigh, our capital city, the law school's there. And if I had it all to do over again, I was planning on going to law school at Campbell, but I didn't have the grades. But it's okay. My best friend is a lawyer. He talked me out of it. So,
yeah, you're absolutely right. That was one of the many very good moves on the university side that Campbell has done. You know, I've been bragging about everything athletics have been doing, but really over the past 30 years, Campbell has done a lot of things like that where there is a need. That they started one of the first. It's been the first med school in North Carolina in 40 years that they started that back just about a half decade ago. Now that the law school that moved to downtown Raleigh, they have a satellite campus at Pope Air Force Base down here as well, that they've really made inroads with the military. They have a pharmacy school. They started up an engineering school, which was one of the first engineering schools in the state just a half decade ago as well. So they've really been able to kind of expand and find their niche and really offer a lot of things that are needed here in North Carolina. And they have been now for the past decade, the private university of choice in North Carolina. If you're going to a private school, they have the most North Carolina students of any private school in the entire state. And that's something that they really take pride in as well.
No question about it. As far as the season, I'm going to put you on the spot. Do you see the Camels making it to the first ever FCS playoffs?
They got a heck of a chance. I really do. I know that they have very good talent. And I know, again, you know, when you haven't seen the freshmen, you guys know the stars are by your name. And a lot of times guys live up to those stars and sometimes they don't. But the Big South Conference kind of lost the big kahunas with Kennesaw State and Monmouth, who were just football only in the Big South Conference. Monmouth has moved to the CAA. Kennesaw State has moved to the Atlantic Sun. So it's there for the picking. Charleston Southern, Gardner Webb, they are improving programs. You guys knew Charleston Southern and how potent they can be. Campbell has never beat Charleston Southern. NCANT is a talented team as well. But with six teams in the Big South this year, Campbell, they don't have to become great all of a sudden overnight. That would be great if they do. But if they improve and these new coordinators work out, and more importantly, that this new talent works out with that experienced quarterback, they very well could be making a trip to their first ever FCS playoff. So that's why there's so much excitement. They've challenged themselves in the non-conference as well. And so I really think that they're going to be battle-tested and ready once the Big South Conference play comes calling.
Yeah, and you know, Chris, just since you mentioned Charleston Southern, we were so impressed with one of their defensive linemen, we actually offered him a scholarship to come play at East Carolina. And that is, if I'm pronouncing the name correctly, Chandre Mims. Bubba's the name guy, right, Dave? Bubba has all the names down pat. So,
yeah, that's correct, Matt. And then his younger brother, CJ Mims, is on the roster as well.
Chandre Mims is a beast, you guys. He is unbelievable. So you definitely got a good pickup. He was all everything in the Big South, but his talent will do something in the AAC, no doubt.
And the fact that the brothers get a chance to play at least 1 year together, I think Chandre has 1 year left, so that'll be fantastic. Yeah. So, Chris, I have one final question for you. I had to save the toughest question for you.
Sure.
What is your favorite barbecue in Greenville, Eastern North Carolina barbecue? Do you have a favorite for everyone, for the viewers?
Oh, my gosh. Okay. So I married a girl whose mom's side of the family is from Aiden, North Carolina. So we are that's what you would think, right? When we first go there, but we're a Bums family down there. So that's what it is. I tried to convert them over to the other side and the Starlight or whatever, and boy, did I get some looks. So that's the barbecue that we have every time we go down there. And speaking of North Carolina, again, you know, I've spent so much time in Eastern North Carolina. And the barbecue is great. They started up last year when Gardner Webb and Campbell plays. It's the Barbecue Bowl. And on the line is Eastern North Carolina barbecue versus that stuff that they claim is barbecue out to the west side of the state. And they play for a trophy that has a pig on it. And the winning team gets their barbecue served for them and paid for them by the other university. So we are representing, even though we're on the far edge over here, Eastern North Carolina barbecue pride. And Campbell won the first barbecue bowl last year, and it'll be here in Buies Creek this year.
That's funny because it was actually a guy, Chris, I don't know if you know this, that tried to have a barbecue bowl, literally a bowl in Greenville, and didn't make the cut with ESPN. But two or three years ago, guys. Bubba, speaking of knowing names, he may remember the gentleman's name, the CEO of the, but check, I'm not making that up. That's a true story, Chris. The barbecue bowl in Greenville, and unfortunately didn't make it. But, you know, we love Greenville, but a lot of people want to go to more exotic places. And no offense to all my friends in Greenville. I work in Greenville. I love Greenville. But those of us in Greenville want to be somewhere else. So this is vacationing. Vacationing is what I'm talking about that time of year. So. But before I get myself in more trouble, Chris, thank you so much. And how can people listen to you and follow you on Facebook and social media?
Yeah, we're we're really excited. We're going to be on the Varsity Network this year, which is a really great thing, in a partnership with Learfield. It's an app that can get you pretty much play-by-play from Power 5 to Group of 5 to Big South. So we'll have every broadcast on the Varsity Network, also GoCamels.com. And if you follow our social media accounts at GoCamels, a lot of great things going on, as you guys had mentioned, have been very generous to talk about not only our football program, but all of our other programs that have really taken the next step. So always great to, you know, listen to you guys and visit with you guys. I think I might have been on the show a couple of years ago, but I'm not sure about that. It was probably a baseball or a basketball battle.
You were, Chris. It was for our state of North Carolina basketball preview.
Okay, yeah. There you go. I figured I was. So thank you guys so much for taking the time out, and it's fun, and it's going to be a lot of fun coming up there to ECU. This is going to be the biggest venue that, again, this fledgling football program will play in. I've been a part of ECU football atmospheres for a long time, and when those first couple notes start of that song, I'm going to have some hair standing up on the back of my neck in the radio booth. So I really can't wait to do it, and I hope I see you guys down there.
All right, well, I think Matt will be there. You can look for us on the tailgate, Phil. We'll be, and we'll save a plate or two for you.
Definitely.
No doubt, Chris.
All right, take care, man. Have a good night.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate Chris. Take care.
Bye-bye. Appreciate Chris very much. And Pete, two great – you want to talk about two great play-by-play guys? I'll tell you what, that guy can be – if I had a university, he would be one of the first people I called, especially for an athletic program. But certainly, guys, Bubba, I know that there's a few topics. We've run a little bit long. But when you have Pete and when you have Chris, two amazing guests, you can't give them like 10 or 15 minutes each. I mean, you got to give them a little bit of love, and we want to do that, right, Bubba?
Yeah, certainly. And I know there was some talk about season tickets. And so let's go ahead and touch on that before we shift away from football. The latest we've heard is 14,700. That's from, I think, the ECU football account, either ECU football or ECU athletics tweeted that out. And so obviously the goal all along from the athletic department has been 15,000. Let's blow that out of the water. This is the most season tickets we've sold since 2017. I do not recall how many we sold in 17, but I do know in 2016, despite the division amongst the fan base after the firing of Ruff and McNeil and it being the first year for Scotty Montgomery, I know we sold a little over 19,000, just short of 19,100. So Pirates, let's not settle for topping 15,000, because we're a lot better than that, and it's time to prove it.
No question about it. It's going to be a lot of fun. And go to 1-800-ECU, ecupirates.com. You can go there. In fact, guys, I've been the old dog dialing 1-800-ECU, but I've been working really hard going to the website almost on a daily basis to get used to my Pirate Club donation, which is ecupirateclub.com. You can go there. And let's step it up there, guys. We have a lot of people, letter winners. We have a lot of people that are graduates. You want to talk about a great university? Let's step it up. They're doing great. They're making a lot of inroads on increasing the Pirate Club. But we can easily get that number up. Everywhere you go, you see ECU T-shirts, sweatshirts, hats. Whether you're alum, you're not alum, maybe you grew up in Greenville and you're a Pirate fan, then give money to the Pirate Club. If you can have Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus, all the different streaming services, then you certainly can do that for sure. One of the things that we're going to pray hard for, we asked for you, is for the one of the recruits for the baseball program, Bubba, and that's Parker Byrd. I know there's an update, and we're praying really hard for him that that he not only can recover, but we really hope for his sake that he can make a recovery as far as even playing baseball, but it's one step at a time.
Absolutely. And Dave, can you still hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Okay. This was one of our loyal viewers and listeners, Richard Allsbrook, sent this to me. This was something that Parker Byrd's mother, Mitzi, had posted on social media here, I guess, about 7:30, so about 2 hours ago as we're live here, a little after 9:30. But she said that Parker continued to have blood flow issues to his right foot. They couldn't find his pulses with the Doppler after he got back into his ICU room, and the surgeon came in and removed removed the catheter that was placed earlier. He's on medication to help prevent the spasms. And after the catheter was removed.
Yeah, I lost you there a second, Bubba. But certainly when we get Bubba back, I know that they – are you back,
okay,
Bubba?
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I got you.
Okay, but basically, very quickly to summarize, essentially, you know, there have been some blood flow issues to his right foot. And so that was the issue that they were attempting to tackle today. And that's something that that his mother was saying that they were still attempting to tackle. And she was just asking for continued prayers. You know, so many friends, family, Pirate Nation have been praying for Parker and showing up outside of ECU Health with signs and so forth.
No doubt about it. And I tell you what, Pirate Nation, definitely pray hard for this kid, a local kid. And we want to make sure that he's part of the family and pray really hard for him. Not only him, for his whole family. I know his mom, if you're a mom or you're a dad, it's a really tough deal. And that's my day job. So I pray hard for him when I'm walking around the hospital, for sure. And anybody that knows the family, let them know that we'll do anything for them. I've tried to give them privacy. Obviously, I know they're going through a lot, but we would do anything for them, regardless if it was EC or not. But certainly, so far, so good. I'm glad, you know, he had a tough go with a boating accident and could have lost his life. And thankfully, we have the nurses and doctors. I know the family has bragged about, so I won't be speaking out of turn to say anything. I know it's biased because of where I work, but I'm really proud of the doctors and nurses and ICU and the step down units that have, and Bubba with the surgeons, they've been working really hard on this kid, and we're going to keep praying hard for him. And being that he's a Pirate, we'll pray even harder, right, Bubba?
Certainly. And also on the baseball front, on the field, you had former Pirate standout, and that's Alec Burleson. Burley has obviously had an unbelievable season with the Memphis Redbirds, the AAA affiliate for the St. Louis Cardinals. And here within the last few days, you know, over the weekend, it seemed as though Burley may be getting traded to the Washington Nationals, but that was not the case. He's still in AAA Memphis, and Burley hit his 19th bomb of the season tonight. So Burley continues to knock the cover off the baseball, as he's batting well over 300 and just a home run shy of 20 bombs. So kind of a log jam there in the St. Louis Cardinals organization, as we were discussing off the air earlier, but it's just a matter of time. It's just the situation right now. The only thing that's keeping Alec Burleson from getting that call up to the bigs. And then you also had the Pirates. We talked about Parker Bird being in the incoming class. You have the Pirates getting from the transfer portal UNC Wilmington middle infielder, a guy that he actually didn't have an at-bat for the Seahawks last year. But anybody that knows anything about UNC Wilmington's roster, they have a very talented shortstop, and they're very good in the middle infield. So don't read too much into that, because obviously if Cliff Godwin and Jeff Colombo and the staff are bringing him in, they feel great about him, and that's Cam Murphy. He had played prior to UNC Wilmington at Brunswick Community College. Obviously, tremendous ties there with Coach Allen. And then also former Pirate pitcher Davis Kirkpatrick is the pitching coach at Brunswick. In addition to what the Pirate staff has seen of Cam, and this summer, Cam, I'm trying to remember who he played for, but in one of the summer leagues, he hit 275, 280, with several extra base hits, stole 14 bases. So welcome Cam Murphy to the East Carolina baseball roster. And we'll continue to keep our eye on things to see if the Pirates bring anybody in here very late from the transfer portal.
No question about it. I don't know what's going on with my phone, so hang on, guys. But certainly I know we're going to talk about the upcoming shows.
Yeah, on Thursday, we'll continue our opponent previews. Obviously, tonight we took a look at the Campbell Camels as well as the Navy Midshipmen, which are, you know, games 3 and 4 in the month of September. And for the 2022 season, in the month of October, the Pirates will take on the Tulane Green Wave down in New Orleans, and we'll catch up with our buddy Corey Glore, the director of broadcasting at Tulane. And that'll be the second half of Thursday's show. After the first half hour, we catch up with Rini and Golia from ESPN, as we always do this time of year and throughout the college football season. Next week, we'll have Ryan Robinson, executive director with the Pirate Club, and then also longtime color analyst alongside Jeff Charles, going back to, I think, 2004, and that's Kevin Monroe. And then the following week, Thursday of that following week, we'll have Ted Pardee, color analyst on the Houston Cougars radio network, and Greg Rubel, the play-by-play voice of the BYU Cougars.
Sounds good. We've got a big lineup for sure, and lots of great guests that we already have set up, and some more that we're working on. Matt, I know that you also are great with former players that potentially could be coming on. So a lot of guys that know that you're on the show now that have come on before, and some maybe new guys.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to have, you know, reach out to a lot of former players and try to welcome them, you know, into the show. And, you know, fellas, it's getting to be that time of year. I mean, it's starting to get exciting. We're now into August, about a month away from college football. And it was nice to speak with, you know, Pete tonight and get the Navy perspective and obviously learn more about Campbell as well. And, you know, the one thing I'll tell you, my one takeaway from tonight, guys, and I'll make this short and sweet, but we at East Carolina are never in a position to underestimate anyone. And we're going to get Campbell's best shot. You can count on that, just like we got Charleston Southern's best shot last year. So I expect, a tough game there as well. And just happy it's almost football season and looking forward to it.
And another upcoming guest that I failed to mention, still working out the day and time, but it may be that we catch up with this guy on Friday, and that's the new head men's basketball coach, Mike Schwartz. So look forward to having him on the program for the first time.
No doubt. It's going to be great, and we'll find out from Coach Schwartz. And hopefully there's things that we want to do to help the program, and hopefully we can do that for sure. Want to thank Pete Medhurst, the play-by-play voice of the Navy midshipman. Thank you, Pete. What a great guy, and the guys like knows about everything. And I certainly want to thank another guy that knows a lot is Chris Haymeyer, the play-by-play voice of the Campbell Camels, the Fighting Camels. I want to thank Bubba and Matt. Bubba, thank you for all that you want to do. And you have one thing before we go?
Yeah, on Wednesday and potentially Thursday night, I'm going to attempt to get up to High Point and support one of our loyal sponsors, and that's Mark Minakazi. He and the Kentucky Health Genomes will be in town. They will be taking on the High Point Rockers, so that's about an hour up the road for me. And I'm going to attempt to get up there to watch Kazi's ball club, and we'll try to throw up some video from that beautiful ballpark there in High Point as take a look at some independent league baseball. And so make sure you go to pjxgloves.com. They have custom baseball gloves, custom batting gloves, football gloves, golf gloves, and then also a lot of hats, hoodies, and t-shirts. So check them out. Use the promo code ECU for 25% off. And we also we talked about barbecue multiple times tonight. So if you're in the Williamston area, go to Porky's Backyard Barbecue, located on 805 East Boulevard, and that is there in Williamston, 252-661-0337. They obviously have a dining room, or you can just hit up the drive-thru and get you some barbecue, chicken ribs, or seafood. They're open every day from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m.
Great stuff. And we'll be there on Thursday night, fellas, playing we have before our show. You can come out. They have the markets. If you're a vendor in the area, then call Porky's, because you can be a vendor for free. You heard me right. Free 99 is Bubba's favorite. Bubba, we have one more thing before we go. Johnny Robertson had a comment about Carter Cunningham. I want to put that up real quick. Carter hit a home run tonight at game one of the Valley League Championship, if you're listening to us live on Tuesday night. And at Charlottesville, Tomcats won 7-1. And Trey Savage pitched a perfect ninth inning. Carter's batting 435 on the season. So congrats to those Pirates. And it looks like the Summer Leagues, we've had a lot of great success for them. All right, we're going to get out of here. Appreciate everybody very much. We'll see you back Thursday night. And as always, go Pirates.
My heart is purple and gold. I'm a pirate down to my soul. And I don't back down, not at all. Find out when the cannons explode. From the sidelines down to the post. Put it down like night. Team, yo, that we got they back. This is our house.